From the St. Louis Public Radio Newsroom, this is The Gateway. It's Friday, the 13th of March. I'm Abby Lurico. Samantha Bee created pointed political satire on TV for two decades, but the experience of aging gave her a new topic to tackle.
I felt like I had a real albatross of confusion and shame around my neck when I entered perimenopause. So I'm going to start talking about it and see what the response is to that.
STLPR's Jeremy Goodwin speaks with Bee about her most personal project. Plus, St. Louis University's men's basketball season is having a record year in terms of both wins and fan support.
Probably the most exciting team since Rick Majerus was here.
Our Jonathan All brings us to the stands with longtime fans and those who've recently jumped on the Billiken bandwagon. Those stories coming up after this news on The Gateway. St. Louis County Executive Sam Page contends that bringing the city of St. Louis into the county as a municipality could solve both jurisdictions' budgetary woes. STLPR's Jason Rosenbaum has more on why Page wants a region-wide conversation on merging the city and county.
Page says a combination of stagnant revenue streams, rising costs, and lack of state or federal support should prompt a community conversation about St. Louis becoming a city within his county. But Page didn't offer any details on what that combination should look like, nor was he willing to appoint members to an entity known as the Board of Freeholders that could develop a plan.
I'm asking for elected officials, for community leaders, for the public to become engaged and to start this conversation about how we provide services with less money.
The last effort to combine St. Louis and St. Louis County floundered in 2019, as did other proposals since the two jurisdictions split in the 1870s. I'm Jason Rosenbaum, St. Louis Public Radio.
Local leaders' reactions to Page's press conference announcement were mixed. Greater St. Louis, Inc. managing partner Ron Kitchens said in a statement that intentional conversations are critical and, quote, while there is not a specific proposal to respond to, we appreciate Dr. Page advancing the discussion about how we can move the St. Louis region forward to address our shared challenges and capitalize on our shared opportunities, unquote. St. Louis Board of Aldermen President Megan Green said in a statement, it's not a secret that the county is facing serious financial difficulties, so she understands the interest in revisiting a city-county merger. But she says her focus is currently on tornado relief and passing a city budget by July 1st. St. Louis County Councilwoman Rita Days pointed to other iterations of the idea faltering with voters and added that a proposed tax on online purchases could be a more direct solution to the county's budget problems.
And that is why the council decided to put that on the ballot, because that's a more immediate remedy, in my mind, of addressing the problem with the deficit that we have.
You can read more at stlpr.org for what we heard from some running to succeed Page as county executive. We also have more analysis on this topic in a special episode of the Meet Me podcast. You can queue it up right after The Gateway. The lines of Missouri's redrawn congressional districts are constitutional, a Jackson County judge has ruled. The new map carves Kansas City into three separate districts. It also lumps portions of the urban core in with more rural areas of the state, more than 200 miles to the east. But the court ruled the new districts do not violate a state mandate that those districts be compact. Attorney Mark Ellinger represented the state in court last month.
And the court looked at those maps and said they were compact, and I think that's pretty good guidance, and I think the legislature followed that guidance, and that's why we believe the map is compact.
Asim Mulji represented the plaintiffs and said rural voters should not be in the same district as voters in Kansas City.
And instead, you see a map that carves straight through those rural communities, straight through urban communities, and serving nobody in Missouri.
A separate Missouri court will determine if Republicans redrawing the state's congressional maps in the middle of the decade was constitutional. The Missouri House has passed a proposed constitutional amendment that would give lawmakers the authority to expand sales and use taxes to eliminate the state income tax. The resolution would need voter approval if it makes it out of the legislature. Republican Representative John Martin spoke in favor of the legislation before the vote.
We have a historic opportunity to help Missourians to have more take-home pay, and they can choose to spend that.
But as St. Louis Public Radio's Sarah Kellogg reports, Democrats say the resolution would actually allow for a massive sales tax hike.
Members voted 98-54 to pass the resolution. It now goes to the Senate, where leadership says lowering the state income tax is a priority. House Minority Leader Ashley Onney called the resolution the largest sales tax hike in Missouri's history. She spoke on how this would affect seniors who largely do not pay income tax.
We have done a kindness to our seniors over the years by eliminating their income tax burden on Social Security. What are we doing? We are negating that. Why did we bother doing that if we are going to make them pay more in sales taxes on the other end?
Governor Mike Kehoe prioritized this legislation during his State of the State address this year. In Jefferson City, I'm Sarah Kellogg, St. Louis Public Radio.
Missouri lawmakers are now on spring break, marking the halfway point of this year's legislative session. STLPR's Lily Halloran reports Republican House Speaker John Patterson says he's happy with his chamber's progress.
Patterson says the House has passed several priorities, including legislation to eliminate the state income tax and implement an A through F grading system to evaluate Missouri schools. Patterson says the top priority after break will be passing the next state budget.
And then two, working with the Senate on passing our bills. We're going to send over, I think we will exceed 100 bills. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, based on what you think of our legislation.
Patterson says that would be a recent record. The Senate is moving much slower than the House this session, but Patterson says that chamber has still exceeded his expectations. In Jefferson City, I'm Lily Halloran, St. Louis Public Radio.
Democratic Senator Maggie Nirenberg says after the break, her party will be focused on passing the budget. She says Democrats are concerned about cuts to public education, childcare, disability services, and mental health treatment programs.
And to us, that is unacceptable. We believe that we have to have the revenue to take care of those things. While at the same time, we believe that it's important that working families have real relief.
Senate Democrats want property tax relief, but they say they disagree with Republicans on a push to eliminate the state income tax. The legislature has thus far passed bills to overhaul the state's juvenile justice system and allow pregnant women to get a divorce. Lawmakers return in a week for the second half of this year's legislative session. Missouri U.S. Senator Josh Hawley says he doesn't believe President Trump will ask for ground troops to be sent to Iran. Trump has primarily used an air campaign against Iran, and Hawley says that he's gotten no indication from Trump that he wants ground troops involved in the war. Hawley also says he doesn't think Iran will be able to reconstitute its nuclear weapons ambitions or its ballistic missile programs. That's even if its government remains the same as it was before the war started.
I think in terms of the direct threat to the United States, I mean, what our military has been able to do between last year's strikes and the last almost 2 weeks, I think has been pretty decisive.
Hawley voted against a resolution constricting the president's ability to use military force in Iran, but he said he would reconsider if Trump asked for ground troops. Missouri ranks among the worst in the country when it comes to protecting online sports gamblers. That's according to a recent report from the Center for Addiction Science, Policy, and Research. The report cites the lack of protections for sports bettors paired with the easy access and addictive nature of online betting apps. Missourians gained access to legal online sports betting last December. Illinois didn't score much better in the report, but did receive points for some consumer policies and actions taken against prediction market platforms, including Kalshi. The center is calling on states to implement more protections, including mandatory loss limits, higher tax rates on gambling, and requiring operators to intervene when users are showing high-risk behavior. A former St. Louis building inspector has been indicted for allegedly using money meant to repair vacant and damaged homes in the city for gambling, vacations, and more. St. Louis Public Radio's Kayvon Mansouri has details.
Federal prosecutors allege Adabanjo Banjo Papuya guided city contracts from the Prop NS program and the Stable Communities STL program to two companies registered by his wife and sister. Both programs aim to repair ailing homes, many of which are located in North St. Louis. In total, the trio received $1.6 million that was rerouted to a joint account. Instead of repair work, the indictment alleges the three spent the funds on cars, mortgage payments, a wedding in Hawaii, gambling, and more. In total, more than 50 contracts between the two programs were steered to Papuya's two businesses. He faces three counts of wire fraud. I'm Kayvon Mansouri, St. Louis Public Radio.
Harris-Stowe State University has been hit with another employee discrimination lawsuit. The case is set for a jury trial December 7th. Lori Jackson, a former human resources director for the historically black university, alleges disability discrimination, retaliation, and a hostile work environment. The lawsuit claims that in 2024, Jackson's disability flared up because she was threatened while on the job and made to feel unsafe, causing her to take a few months of medical leave. Jackson alleges that when she returned, Harris-Stowe didn't work with her on requested accommodations, and she was later terminated. Earlier this year, the university paid more than $2 million to settle a previous employee discrimination case. Harris-Stowe declined to comment. St. Louisans will celebrate the 20th annual 314 Day tomorrow. As St. Louis Public Radio's Katie Gravich reports, the event is an opportunity to celebrate all things STL, but especially to reflect on the city's black history.
Black St. Louisans Tatum Polk and Terrell Dip Evans founded 314 Day to celebrate the city and foster community, but it has become a part of St. Louis's broader identity. The holiday is a moment to reflect on black history and culture in St. Louis. Cicely Hunter is a historian with the Missouri History Museum. She says the celebration is a reminder that black culture is essential to St. Louis history.
When we think about economic development, we can just look at St. Louis's history because St. Louis is, in some way, shape, or form, is also indicative of the national representation of black experience and black culture.
The museum's monthly history exploration days this weekend will focus on St. Louis history in honor of 314 Day. I'm Katie Gravich, St. Louis Public Radio.
And if you're listening to this podcast from somewhere far away but have held on to that 314 area code, cheers. Stays for you, too. Samantha Bee is one of the most prolific political satirists of the television age. She appeared for 12 years on Comedy Central's The Daily Show with Jon Stewart and mined similar territory on TBS for 7 seasons with Full Frontal with Samantha Bee. The Toronto native brings her stage show, How to Survive Menopause, to City Winery St. Louis on Sunday. St. Louis Public Radio's Jeremy Goodwin asked Bee why she was so surprised that her TBS show lasted as long as it did.
We just very audaciously spoke our minds. And like, it was the first show like that to be helmed by a woman. And I felt like we were making history somewhat with the show. And I think that I definitely said hard truths out loud. I spoke my mind in a way that didn't feel sustainable on television. Like, I'd never seen it before.
Hillary may not have reached out to female voters by name, but I think the experience of listening to a man who just discovered a topic on the internet 3 weeks ago belligerently correct a woman who has been studying said topic her entire adult life felt very Monday to most women. Look,
I thought, oh, well, we'll have six episodes and then they'll just go, this is too much. But it turned out there was actually a pretty large appetite for a woman speaking her mind on television. And so I'm grateful for that. And I'm also equally thankful that I don't do it now.
Well, with that in mind, you know, in an era where we see a lot of extreme behavior from people in public life, it's common.
We sure do.
It's common for people to say things like, you can't even parody that. It's too ridiculous already. Is that a thing? Does the window for satire close if reality gets a little too out there?
Well, it certainly makes it more difficult to do satire if what's happening is more absurd than anything you could than anything your imagination could conjure. It makes it very difficult. It also makes it very difficult if the stakes are so high that, you know, it's a lot more fun to make fun of silliness than it is to make fun of, like, starting a war. That's not so funny.
George H.W. Bush throwing up on the Japanese prime minister seems like a million years ago.
Just even saying those words makes me smile. It almost seems pastoral.
Is political material a space that you may move back into?
To be honest with you, I don't think so. I feel like in some ways I've said all that I came to say on that account. You know, when my show ended, I thought, what have I not said? And for me, that subject matter was menopause because it was really hard for me. I just didn't know what was happening to me. And I had trouble talking about it. And I don't really have trouble talking about things. I felt like I had a real albatross of confusion and shame around my neck when I entered perimenopause. I didn't know what was going on. And we really weren't talking about it then at all. Like, it was just not in the public consciousness. And so I thought, well, if I'm challenged by this material, I think people are challenged by this material in general. So I'm going to start talking about it and see what the response is to that. When someone's ovaries start slowing down, everyone's like, ha, look at that. All those little eggs, just like little peppercorns now. I guess, I don't know, time to die? Oh, what's that? You're only 45. Well, do you have any grandchildren you could take care of? There's just such a hunger to be seen by women of a certain age. And I really felt that. And I have answered that call, I think, in a way that is so pleasurable and satisfying for me. And I feel just so completely alive on the stage, talking to people who are hungering to laugh about something that is so dumb that is happening to their bodies.
Is this under the category of a comedy show? Is that how you?
Oh, yeah, it is a comedy show, and it is a catharsis show.
That was comedian Samantha Bee speaking with St. Louis Public Radio's Jeremy Goodwin. St. Louis University's men's basketball team has had an incredible season so far. They were ranked nationally for a few weeks and were undefeated at home in front of sellout crowds. St. Louis Public Radio's Jonathan All reports the Billiken season has rejuvenated longtime fans and brought new ones to the arena.
Steve Kinahan of O'Fallon, Missouri has been a fan of SLU basketball for a very, very, very long time.
How long have you had your season tickets?
Four different arenas.
And name them.
Keel. Then we went to the Barn, where the Blues used to play. Then we went to where the Blues play now, Enterprise, and now we're here at Chaffetz.
Is this your favorite place?
Oh, yeah, definitely a basketball arena. I love it.
So what do you make of this year's team?
It's probably the most exciting team since Rick Majerus was here and Charlie Spoonhauer.
Spoonhauer was the head coach in the 90s and led the team to the NCAA tournament three times. Majerus and his assistant, Jim Cruz, had three straight Big Dance appearances from 2012 to 2014. While there have been good teams in the past, this year's squad has a 27-4 record, the best in school history. Longtime fans are thrilled.
No, this is terrific. I'm glad everybody's having a good time.
Jerry Jokerst is a 1960 graduate of St. Louis University and has been a fan ever since. He and his wife, Dee, have been coming to games in large part to spend time with old friends, but he's also impressed with the next generation of Billikens.
I think what's great is the student section. It's just great this year. That's the best I've ever seen it.
The Billikens student section, known as the Slunatics, have special cheers and chants, choreographed efforts to distract opponents, and rip up newspapers and toss them in the air as part of their antics. Dave Matthews from Ohio is a freshman at SLU. He says supporting the basketball team has been a big part of starting his college experience.
So incredible. It just reinforces the fact that I feel like I made the right choice. Coming here, being part of the student section, it's been incredible. It's made me feel like so welcomed and such a part of not only the school, but also the city.
Fans in the student section may only have a few years cheering for the Billikens, but James Cook, a freshman from Arkansas, says the team's success this year has given him an opportunity to connect with alumni and longtime supporters.
Yes, this might be our first year here, but they've witnessed about everything possible. Blowout losses, blowout wins, close games, close losses. They've earned this right to see this team play some good basketball.
And when they talk to fans who've been following the team since before they were born, students just might run into people who have an even closer connection to SLU basketball. Steve Craig from Belleville played for the Billikens in the early 70s and has been to just about every game since as a fan. He says this year's team is something special.
As far as I know, our athletes go to class. That's all I'm going to say about that. Well, they're winners, and they seem like they really like each other. They're playing to win for each other, and they're fun to watch.
And while Craig and other fans are celebrating this year's season and the amount of support the team has gotten, they're happy to invite new people onto the bandwagon.
This is my first game, though, so my friend said if they lose, it's our fault.
Dawn Robbie of Baldwin says she's always sort of followed the team over the years, but it took the buzz of this season and going 19-0 at home for her to get out her Billikens sweatshirt and head to Chaffetz.
Look, I have had this in my closet for like 15 years. And this is the first time I got to wear it to a game.
SLU basketball may be flying high, but their last game of the year on the road at George Mason was their worst, a 29-point loss. And there's still the A-10 tournament in Pittsburgh. And while they are the number one seed, they'll likely have to win in order to go to the NCAA tournament. And they won't have the benefit of a sold-out crowd at home. I'm Jonathan Aul, St. Louis Public Radio.
The Billikens take on George Washington University this morning at 10:30 in the quarterfinals of the Atlantic 10 tournament. The Gateway is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, a listener-supported service of the University of Missouri, St. Louis. Theme music by Ryan McNeely of Adult Fur, but right now, the SLU Pep Band. I'm Abby Larico, and from the St. Louis Public Radio newsroom, thanks for listening to The Gateway. Hope you have a lucky Friday the 13th and a great weekend.